I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is Internet Marketing. Brought to you by Site Visibility at sitevisibility.co.uk. This is Internet Marketing. Now, before we start today, we'd like to encourage anyone looking for help with their digital marketing to get in touch with Site Visibility. Whether you have a burning digital marketing question or you're looking for an agency to work with, they'd love to hear from you. Give them a call, +44 1273 733 433, or fill out the form at sitevisibility.co.uk/contact. Alternatively, you can talk to either Scott or Sean via the live chat function on the site. They'd be happy to help. Now, today I'm joined by Warren Knight, hip-hop dancer, entrepreneur, speaker, trainer, author, and many other things. How are you doing, Warren?
I'm very well, thank you very much, Andy. How are you?
I'm very well. I'm particularly well because the weather is nice at the moment here in sunny Brighton. It is, in fact, sunny. And I think spring or even summer might have started, at least for the weekend. That could be our summer. But you're in London, aren't you?
I lived in London for 25 years,
yes.
But I just very recently moved out of London. So it was a big decision to want to leave the big city, but it was something that, because my life had changed and shifted slightly, it was, a lifestyle choice that I decided to make.
Yes, I know those sort of choices. We were in London and then we came to Brighton. But anyway, less about the weather and geographical locations. Tell us about you. How does a hip-hop dancer become an entrepreneur and a sort of digital business guru?
Well, I think, that word entrepreneurialism, I don't think was around so much when I was, 16, 17, 18 years old. Yeah. And I didn't think I realised what I was doing at the time. We used to just grab a piece of lino, grab our massive stereo and our huge batteries and just disappear down to London on the train. We used to go to Hyde Park and that was it. We were just there dancing on a Saturday afternoon, people watching. That term battling is quite strange now, but showing what you can do compared to what somebody else can do and everybody enjoying the whole atmosphere of it. And then just taking that energy and that fun. And quite funny, actually, that you're now down in Brighton, because it was Brighton where I first got noticed. It was what's that club that was under the Arches back in 87, 88?
Oh, I don't know. There's loads of clubs there now. It could be one of zillions.
I can't remember what the name of it was then, but friends and I were down there. We drove down to Brighton kind of for the weekend and went to the club, and all of a sudden these guys got up on stage and started doing all this hip hop dancing, and they were all together and it was amazing what they were doing. Like, oh yeah, that's great. Let's battle those guys when they get off the stage, show them what we can do. And all of a sudden it turned out to be, you guys are quite good and you're white. come and join us. How would you like to travel around the UK with us and do what we all love? And I was like, what, you're going to pay me to do what I love and I stay in hotels and I'm in a different city every weekend? Why wouldn't I want to do that? So that's really kind of how it started. Then it was then I got into the whole illegal rave scene. So it was just getting paid to dance on stage for people like the Prodigy and Shader Rhythm, all of these illegal raves, and it was just the whole buzz of waiting for the phone call. Where is it? Where are we off to?
I'll text you the venue.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but do you know what? Now he's a good friend of mine, but he used to put on the illegal raves then. And he used to make, I'd probably say, 40, 50% of his profit of those illegal raves out of making telephone calls. Because in those days, we had our big brick, kind of NEC mobile phone.
Oh, yeah.
And to receive a phone call would cost you as much as to send a, you know, to make a phone call. So he used to make his money by calling people and telling them where the rave was. It's like genius. So, yeah. And then I just got to know all the DJs and then started running clubs. So I was running Drum and Bass Club in Covent Garden, you know, with some now global DJs you know, who were just sort of starting out at that time. So, yeah, it just kind of went from the love of hip hop music to dancing and then to getting paid to do what I do, knowing DJs, seeing a niche in the market and going, oh, there's no drum and bass club on a Sunday. People love to keep, you know, kind of clubbing in those days. They still probably do now. I wouldn't know anything about that anymore. Yeah. But, yeah, so just saw a niche, opened up Drum and Bass Club, and, you know, within 2 or 3 months, we were just ram packed every single Sunday, which was great. And I was what, 21, 22 then?
Yeah.
I'm running a drum and bass club. So, yeah.
That's fantastic. So you, I mean, because you then went on to run quite a few businesses, and now of course you've got a blog, you're on the speaking circuit talking about digital businesses. I'm just wondering, sort of on that journey, and yeah, starting with the music, the dancing, the hip hop, you must have had some sort of, I'll call them epiphanies, that's probably not the best word, around business and online success. And I'm just wondering when those started to kick in, tell us about those.
So I think it was the dancing side was just kind of like money in my pocket. I didn't really look at it as I'm actually doing what I love and getting paid for it. Oh, I'm a professional dancer. It was actually when I started to run the club and then have security, and then the security had like our brand on our jackets and everything. And you start to get a regular income. Like, well, I'm paying out money and I'm taking in money and I'm left with some profit at the end. It's like, oh, actually, I'm running a real business here.
Yes.
So at that point then, I thought, actually, I feel like I could step into the world of running a business, but running, you know, something that's just a club at that time really wasn't enough for me. So I then thought, well, what more could I want to do? And I reached out to the Prince Youth Business Trust and worked with them for a 6 month period, wrote a whole business plan, and then put together a business which was based around music and clothing, which was my passion at that time.
Yeah.
And that was really when I knew, you know, when I sat down and bought my computer, didn't know what to do with it, you know, at 23 years old.
Yeah.
But, you know, Excel spreadsheet, what's that? but it was that point then, really, that I had that kind of epiphany of actually, I'm a business person around what's going on. So, yeah, but that was, I think, one of them for me. And then definitely the other one was I started to work out of China. So I worked out of China for 11 years. I worked with global brands like Disney and Nickelodeon. And the epiphany for me at that point, and I was going through a bit of a personal development process around at that time, was the importance of sales and the importance of sales for a business. And I decided to really focus down on that, learn from some incredible people like Brian Tracy and some other incredible salespeople at that time that were more ethical than not ethical. There are, you know, there are always two sides to a coin.
Yeah.
And really understand that importance of building relationships and building rapport with people over and above actually having a sales technique and actually just being true to who you are and building rapport with somebody. Learning that process and neuro-linguistic programming really helped me understand that a little bit. So that was another really big epiphany for me. And so I set myself a goal. I said, right, I want to achieve $1 million of sales in a single month. And, you know, I set myself a date to when I wanted to achieve it. I gave myself like a 90-day run up to that, make sure I had all the kind of like my marketing and everything in place. And I achieved it, but I didn't achieve it. So it was 33 days that I hit my $1 million turnover. I know, but I still like to say $1 million of sales in a month.
Oh, I think you can get away with that. Yeah.
Yeah. I think so. So that was another big, you know, epiphany for me, was just how important sales is in the whole growth of a business.
And of course, you do lots of talks and lectures and business things, particularly around social media marketing. I was wondering, actually, because we'll come on, you mentioned relationship marketing. We'll come on to that in a minute. But I just wanted to get your feeling on sort of social media at the moment. We've had this big kerfuffle, of course, recently around Facebook and Twitter. I think yesterday mentioned a data breach, and we're all supposed to change our passwords.
Passwords.
And then we've got the fake news thing and the Donald Trump thing, Mr. T thing. I mean, how do you think social media is changing in the last few years, or don't you think it's changing?
Well, I think, you know, a friend of mine posted to say that his Uber account got hacked and someone had just booked a taxi on his Uber account. So I don't think data breach is specifically focused on, you know, social media or, you know, in the marketing world. Obviously, it's something that we talk about quite a lot. So it's not new, you know, that these things happen. They do happen, unfortunately. How my website got hacked. I wrote a whole blog about it. It was a challenge of mine for a week or two with my team. And that was very frustrating. Yeah. And we just have to, you know, go, well, it happens. We've got to learn from it. We've got to react as quick as possible and then just move on with it. So I think the actual kind of the kerfuffle and the data breach and that sort of stuff is something that it's a spike in a moment and everyone goes, right, that's it. You know, should I delete my Facebook page? And certain people were very open about, you know, wanting to do that. But then you've really got to take a step back and go, well, actually, why am I personally using Facebook? If you want to delete your business Facebook page for that reason, then that's your choice. But is it about connecting with your friends and family that are traveling all around the world? And that's why you want to use your personal Facebook page.
Yeah.
You know, then that's different. How else do you know, people don't tweet about, you know, kind of what their friends are doing. They tend to use Facebook for that as a family. From that perspective, I think it's just that things are going to go up and down. They're not going to change.
Now, you talked about, you alluded to relationship marketing, and it's something we hear a lot about these days. I'm just wondering, why do you think it's so important these days, and what do you think are some of the common mistakes businesses make in this area?
I think, I forgot to say right at the very beginning, because we got kind of right into the zone of this. I love you, Andy. I love this podcast. It's one of my top three favorite podcasts always listening to. No problem at all. My wife was asking me, well, you know, what are you doing today? And I said, I'm going on one of my favorite podcasts. And she's like, oh, wow, that's quite amazing. So I have listened to a lot of your podcasts. And I think it was Dave who was talking about personalization.
Yeah.
And the idea of the importance of personalization. And I think with this GDPR that's kicking in, you know, very soon, you know, that's really made people think about their audience and think about the importance of engaging with the people that are engaging back with them. And that for me is has been a big mindset shift for a lot of the people that I work with, the importance of scaling down, talking to the people that actually care. And when you think about that from a digital mindset perspective, that's where then you need to start thinking about that from a social media perspective. You know, it's great to broadcast to everybody, but not everybody really cares. It's the people that you have a great relationship with that keep coming back over and over time again, that you build huge loyalty with. So, you know, building relationships from a marketing perspective is all about the personalization. You know, knowing that that person lives in Edinburgh or knowing that that person lives in Brighton, and whether that's, you know, part of the data that you keep that you've obviously got approval of, or whether that's you have the mindset to remember, go, right, yeah, oh, Andy lives in Brighton. Great. Okay. So now that's a relationship side of things. So now when we go online or chat inside of LinkedIn and, you know, promote the podcast, whatever it might be, there will be the small things that people go, oh, he listened. He actually listened to me and remembered. And that's where having something like marketing automation is so powerful. I've gone through three different pieces of technology over the last 10 years of doing digital marketing and, you know, really understanding the importance of personalization. When you talk to a certain target market, keep talking to them in that tone of voice.
Yeah.
Keep giving them that information that's going to make them remember you and nurture that database. With when I do my professional speaking, sometimes it takes people, it's a 2-year life cycle. If I'm speaking to an audience of in the jewelry industry, for instance, it can take those guys 2 years of nurturing to actually go, I now need to make the next step in my business career of digital marketing. I've now got the time and the want and the money to do that. Yeah. I need to go be working with Warren. So I've got this 2-year cycle. And if I don't nurture them through that process, which is where email marketing is so powerful to understand that, you lose them and they go somewhere else.
Yeah, yeah. You mentioned automation there, and I was just wondering about artificial intelligence, AI, because it's something which is in the media and the news a lot at the moment. You've got people like Elon Musk who say, oh, it's really dangerous. And then you've got people like Bill Gates who I can't quite work out whether he loves it or he hates it. Sometimes he says it's really good and sometimes he says, oh, no, it's really dangerous. And then, you know, Stephen Hawking that was warning us about it. I know you've got some interesting thoughts on AI. I wonder if you could share those with us.
I think, you know, that word artificial intelligence is something that to the everyday person, if you like, just thinks about movies and, you know, kind of, you know, I've now got my lawnmower, you know, can just go mow my lawn for me, you know. For me, it really comes down to, you know, it is machine learning. Mm. And I think, you know, in the world of marketing, the word artificial intelligence, you know, we use it as a buzzword, if you like, but it is about machine learning. And I think, you know, there's two ways to really look at this. And I've been playing with it as a marketeer, you know, primarily with chatbots and conversations with people. But 2018 is the year of the buzzword for artificial intelligence. Yeah. And, you know, if we go back to, you know, this is the year of video marketing. This is the year of video marketing. Every year seems to be the year of video marketing. Yeah. But this year it has been all about, you know, artificial intelligence and machine learning. So I don't think, you know, as SMEs or even as, you know, sort of corporate businesses, I've heard a lot of huge mistakes that big brands have made by integrating machine learning into their customer service, if you like, and how it switched people off, because, you know, they want a human being behind that. And, you know, they want to ask a question. The machine learning hasn't quite got to understand how to reply to that particular question. So it gives you something that's not relevant. Yeah. So there's a lot of learning still to be had around all of that. And I think it's Google talks about the 70-20-10 rule, where they take 10% of their marketing budget and just go and try something.
Yes.
So take a look at that. Play around with some chatbots. Think about, you know, what technology you can use from a machine learning perspective. Don't have it as a focus of that's what you're going to achieve within your business and set massive KPIs around it. Have some fun with it. You know, learn, make mistakes, trip over, pick yourself up again, see what other people are doing with it, and then really think about whether or not it's going to be an integral part of your marketing strategy.
Now, we've talked about quite a few things in this show so far. Here's the tricky bit. If you could pick, I don't know, two, maybe three top tips for our listeners today from all your massive experience, what would it be? What would they be?
I think the importance of understanding what a very good mentor of mine gave to me, and the terminology of the customer acquisition journey. And so when you look at how to map out what a customer does to actually come to the point of being a visitor, then being a prospect, and then being a customer. That part for me is really key. Mm. And the big part that I've noticed with businesses is, as I mentioned, that nurturing phase. We all go out there and we go, right, I've got to get more traffic. I've got to do this. I've got to do that. I've got to, you know, get more people to know about me as a brand and, you know, amplify, you know, what your brand does. And that's all great and wonderful. But we don't own any of those people inside of Facebook and LinkedIn. We don't own them. So what we need to do is take them out of that social space and bring them into our environment where we can actually nurture that database to capture those details and make that person become a prospect of ours, and then really drill down and add value to that person in that more closed environment. So you take people over to a closed Facebook group, you know, who are your prospects, ask them to come and join you over there, not an open page, but a place where you can really get to know that person and add value to them. Mm. So, you know, understand that customer acquisition journey, go through a bit of user journey mapping, you know, with your customers, both from an online to an offline perspective. Is one thing that I've really asked, you know, the audience to think about.
Yeah.
I think the other one for me would be that there's a lot of noise around paid advertising, especially with what's happening with Facebook and its algorithm. Yeah. And you've had some great guests talking specifically around Facebook and the organic reach. And, you know, now we're having to do some paid advertising. There's a lot of noise around that at the moment. And I think with what I've gone through within my business, and I even had this conversation with my team around the costs of advertising. If I go back 12 months, I was paying 18 to 35 pence for a remarketing, you know, click. I looked at my recent campaign, that's gone up to £1.57.
Yeah.
So, but when I look at actually talking to my audience through custom audience marketing in Facebook, you know, that price has dropped. So things are really turning themselves upside down. But what I will say is, you know, I've now stopped any paid advertising inside of Google because it just doesn't convert for me.
Yeah.
So with paid advertising, you know, it's okay to say no to it and don't feel bad about not being on Google and advertising or not, you know, not doing, you know, marketing inside of Facebook. There are other ways to spend a small amount of money, like on remarketing, like on custom audience, that might get you a better return on your investment. So it's okay to say no to paid advertising.
Well, Warren, thanks so much for joining us today. How can our listeners find out more about you, your books, because you're an author as well, aren't you? Your talks, etc.
Yeah, you can go over to my Warren Knight website, so warrenknight.co.uk, and or come and join me on Twitter, at Warren Knight. I actually had to go, it took me about 6 years to steal that name from somebody else. I had to go and get a trademark, so yeah. I now own at Warren Knight. Or come and join me on LinkedIn, any of those three places. I'd love to have a conversation with you.
Well, thanks, Warren. And thanks for listening, everyone. The show notes are at the usual place, sitevisibility.co.uk/IMpodcast. Please leave us a review if you're enjoying the show, because that really helps. Questions and suggestions to the email is podcast@sitevisibility.co.uk. You can tweet at sitevisibility. We have a site visibility group on LinkedIn. That's all from me, Andy. And it's all from Warren.
Well, thank you very much, Andy. Lovely. A real pleasure to be on here today, so thank you.
Absolute pleasure, Warren. Thanks. And we'll see you next time on Internet Marketing.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.